Shalom, everybody. We are going back to the beginning of Orot HaMilchama. Last couple of times, we did Piska Bet. Now we're going back to Piska Aleph, where it's Source 3. And Rav Kook writes as follows. Just to drop a background, this is being written during World War I. But as we'll see, the ideas are a lot more shayach, a lot more applicable to the wars of Israel. And I have no doubt that Rav Kook already had that in mind when he wrote the Orot HaMilchama, as we saw last time. Kesheyesh milchama gedola ba'olam, mitorer koach Mashiach. When there are great wars in the world, the spirit of Mashiach is awakened. This is almost a direct quote from Source 4. What I do when editing the Rav Kook books is to always look for the source where he gets it from. Parenthetically, Rav Kook, he writes as he thinks of the ideas. He doesn't put footnotes. And nevertheless, sometimes it's very obvious. Here, in Bereishit Rabbah Membet, on the Pasuk Vayhi Bimei Amraphel Melech Shinar, etc., we remember the four kings from the north, who were so strong, they defeated the five kings of the south. They kidnapped Lot. And then Avram chases them all the way up north. And the question is, why do we have an entire perek, an entire chapter in Tanakh about this world war? Amar Rabbi Elazar bar Avina, Im ra'ita malchiyot mitgarot elu be'elu, if you see countries fighting with each other, Sapel l'raglot shel Mashiach. Search for the footsteps of Mashiach. Well, so Rav Kook is writing this in the context of World War I, where he's clearly talking about big countries. And also that apparently is the context of the four kings against the five. The Axis against the Allies. I'm not sure who was the Axis or who was the Allies, who were the good guys and who were the bad guys in those days. They were all paganists. Teda sheken, sharei bimei Avraham, ayedei shenitgaru malchiyot elu be'elu, ba ha-geula la-Avraham. The geula, this is the first time that Avraham conquered all the way up to the north, and that's how we freed Lot. And as we see a connection between what Rav Kook is going to mention later, what we say every day in Tefillah, ba'al milchamot, zorea tzedakot matzmiach yeshuot. That there's a connection between wars and the redemption. Now, the Gemara Masechet Megillah, it's really the only place in all of rabbinic literature where the term Atchalta Geula is mentioned, the beginning of the redemption. It's in the context of wars. And the Gemara says, Milchamot nami Atchalta Geulain. We also know this from the Navi, Zechariah, Yechezkel, Milchamot Gog u'Magog. And interesting that during World War I, as we see, people started talking about in terms of, hey, this is Milchamot Gog u'Magog, a world war. At the time, obviously, they called it the Big War, the Great War, not World War I. But then when World War II came, that was much greater. And there were a lot more killed. And also the Jews were in the middle of World War II. So they said, oh, this must be Milchamot Gog u'Magog. And then came the War of Independence. And people looked back in the sources and they saw that Milchamot Gog u'Magog is after we returned to Eretz Yisrael, the Goyim are going to group up and try and take it away. And then in the Six-Day War, where a similar story happened, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously, in a typical biblical story in 6 days, changed the world. So we see that we're not going to point at this or that as Milchamot Gog u'Magog. The main point that comes out of here is that it is part of the Geula process. Now, what's the idea? The idea is redemption is the biggest overhaul in world history. And we all learned in history about Woodrow Wilson and after World War I, the New World Order. And redemption is a new world order. And just like they carved up the countries in Europe differently after World War I, and the Ottoman Empire collapsed, and the Austro-Hungary Empire collapsed, and everything was divided differently. And similarly in World War II, the redemption is a new world order. And that's why it's logical that wars, which is a international shakeup, that is part of the story. So that's point number one, okay? That wars are part of the redemption. Continues Rav Kook, back to source 3. Et hazamir higia. This we know from Shir HaShirim. The pasuk begins, the time of, and here it's important, the different explanations. Let's call it the time of singing has come, or the time there's a bird called the zamir, when its time has come. And what's the continuation? V'kol hator nishma be'artzenu. And the sound of the dove, the turtle dove, is heard in our land. Now we know that the turtle dove is a symbol of peace. But before we get to the peace, et hazamir higia. What is et hazamir higia? Zmir aritzim. Chazal are dorish, and this is directly from Shir HaShirim Rabbah, verse 5. That et hazamir can be referring to the pruning season. That before springtime is the pruning season. And that's what Chazal in Source 5, Doresh, et hazamir higia, higia zman shel urla shetizamer. When we do a brit milah, that taking off of the foreskin is a positive action. Higia zman shel rishaim shishaberu. Also, when we beat the evil, that also is a positive action. Shavor Hashem Mater Rishaim. Also, Higia Zman Shel Bavlim Lihishamed. Now, whenever it says Bavli, you have to look in the different editions. Another edition is, and that's more logical, Shel Malchut HaRishah. Lihichalot, that it's talking about Rome and the Roman Empire. That, but the common denominator is that part of the redemption is to get rid of the evil people, and then v'kol hator nishma be'artzenu. And that's what Rav Kook is saying. And this is point number two. That a second reason why. Again, what was the first reason why wars are part of the redemption process? It's an overhaul, a new world order. Point number two is dafka pretty ingenious, because all of us learned in Nevi'im Achronim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as part of the Geula process, is going to get rid of the evil people. Now, those people have nothing to look for in Yimot HaMashiach. They're not going to be around. So how is Hashem going to get rid of them? Right? Hashem stopped doing supernatural miracles in Megillat Esther 2,500 years ago. So he's not going to open up the ground and anybody who's evil is going to be swallowed up. So Rav Kook is suggesting, and this is something that he writes in several places in Orot HaKodesh, that hara mechale et atzmo. Evil undoes itself. In other words, let's read the sentence again in Source 3. Et hazamir higia, the time of pruning has come. Zmir aritzim, to prune out the evil people. Harasha'im nikhadim min ha'ulam, that the evil people are getting, hare, who starts the wars? You look at Hamas. Evil people are the ones who start wars. Germany starts wars. If you look in the Arab world, they're always starting wars against each other. Civil wars in Syria, civil wars in Libya, civil wars in Egypt. Those people, unfortunately, murder is part of their culture. They start wars, and even if they start against innocent people, that we're going to talk about in the next sentence, but they always get walloped, because it's just a matter of time till a group of allies group up together, and they jump on the bully. And so that is the second point. How is Hashem going to get rid of the evil people of Yimot HaMashiach? They start wars, and they get walloped. You know, obviously we commemorate this year, it's going to be not 26,000, but 27,000. All of a sudden, a jump on Yom HaZikaron of the number of korbanot, of people who were killed in all the wars and terrorism in Israel. A lot of time we don't even think about how many Arabs were killed in those wars. Not that it bothers me, but I don't know if it's hundreds of thousands, but they start the wars and they always get walloped. And that is the second point. It's not the main point, as we're going to see, but it's another interesting point that I admit, I don't think anybody aside from Rav Kook even really... What's beautiful about Rav Kook is he looks at the Tanakh and at the redemption in realistic eyes, right? We're not in kindergarten anymore, and we have to try and figure what is going to be with all of those evil people. How's the world going to get rid of them? So Rav Kook is saying, again, this is one of the reasons why wars in the Tanakh, in Chazal, is part of the Geulah process. And after we get rid of a lot of the evil, v'kol hator nishma be'artzenu, the sound of peace of the turtle dove will be heard in our land. And now we get to the punchline. Hayichidim hanisfim below mishpat. What about those innocent who are killed without a judgment, without a court of law, right? When the bullets are flying, there are a lot of innocent people who are killed in the battlefield. What about them? They are not the evil people. Continues Rav Kook, Shebetoch ha-mapecha shel shetef ha-milchama, in the overturn, in the overhaul of the bullets flying left and right, Yesh koach mimidat mitat tzadikim amichaperet. When the innocent people, unfortunately, are killed in war, this is connected with the concept that the death of the righteous atones. Now, I'll already mention parenthetically, we spoke about this once, the Christians make a big deal out of this, right? That they say that Yeshu died and it atones for everyone else's sins. But it is a Jewish concept. It's not so central to Judaism. But what does it mean in Judaism? Rav Kook is going to explain that it's very logical. But notice, the first point in the sentence is that Rav Kook started talking about the innocent who are killed in war, and then he jumps right away to the tzaddikim, to the righteous. In other words, it's not just the innocent who are killed in war, It's davka the righteous. And I paid a couple of shiva calls over the last period. And maybe I'll just remember my first Yom HaZikaron in Israel. I was 17 years old. I'd never been at a Yom HaZikaron memorial tekes. And there were four guys in Yeshivat Kiryat Arba. Out of 20, there were just 20 guys in the yeshiva in Milchemet Yom Kippurim. Four of the guys, that's 20%, were killed. And everyone was talking about them, Yom HaZikaron. Each guy was greater than the next. And as a cynical 17-year-old, I said to myself, what are they going to say, bad things? You're not going to say something bad about somebody who died. You know, as they say, Achrimot Kedoshim Memor. Right, the orders of the Parshan is humorous that after somebody dies, everyone says that they were holy. That is until my friend started dying in the Lebanese War, and afterwards in terror. I realized that it is 100% logical. It's not a cliche that the best ones are the ones who die during war. Because who are the guys who are on the front line? Those are the guys who volunteer to go to battle units. You don't have to go there, right? Only one out of every eight Israeli soldiers is in a battle unit. So the guys who get killed are usually the ones who volunteer, who are altruistic enough to go to the battle units. Who are the ones who volunteer to carry the mag, or to carry the negev? Those are the guys who lead the charge. They're the most altruistic of the altruistic. So they're the ones who are hit first. Not only that, Very often, the Israeli army is very, very clear that you do not leave a friend wounded on the battlefield. And my son Aminadav did a lot of training of carrying soldiers, sometimes even two soldiers, wounded soldiers, on two shoulders, while firing at the same time in order to save your friend. Now, this is just a classic story. This is a guy from Yeshivat Or Etzion, where I learned. His name is Gadi Ezra. And he was killed in Chomat Magen. How was he killed? His friend Nisim was shot by a sniper in Ramallah. In Jenin, I'm sorry. And what is a sniper? It's one bullet. He has a telescope. He hits his target, but you don't see where he fired from. He just shoots one bullet, and then as soon as he sees another target, he'll shoot one more bullet. And he almost always hits his target. And the problem is you can't react because you don't know where he's firing from. And he'll just keep... Now, the problem is this soldier, Nisim, was hit, and he's bleeding. And the commander yells, is anyone willing to volunteer to go and save Nisim? So Gadi Ezra, he's the first one. He gets up to volunteer. The commander gives the order to cover him. What does it mean to cover him? To shoot a lot in the air. But anybody, a smart sniper, knows that you have no idea where he is. So he doesn't have to lower his head because you're not really shooting at him. And he waits till somebody gets to the wounded soldier, where he obviously has a free line of fire. And then he shoots the second guy, too. And that's how Gadi was killed. Now, if you go into the website of soldiers who fell in the IDF, you will see that each one of them, it's almost the same story. They volunteer. This one volunteered in the Boy Scouts. The second one volunteered in Bnei Akiva. The third one volunteered in Magen David Adom. These are people who volunteer. Their whole high school, they were volunteering. In the army, they volunteer. So this is the cream of the cream of the crop. So that's why Rav Kook goes so quickly from the innocent people who are killed in the battle to the tzaddikim. I'll also mention, once we're talking about those who were killed, because it also is connected, in Yom HaZikaron, we commemorate also the Korbanot of Terror. Now, everybody knows that the two places which have suffered the most from terror are Kiryat Arba, Hebron, and the other is Itamar. Because one is right outside of Hebron, the other is right outside of Shechem. And what type of person is willing to go and live in these type of places? These are very altruistic people. And that's exactly what Rav Kook is talking about when he says that not only are the people who are killed innocent, but they are davka tzaddikim. What is this idea of that the death of tzaddikim makes us better people, atones for us? Rav Kook explains, olim hem lemala b'shoresh ha-chayim. These people on the battlefield, this altruism, raises them up to the source of life. What is the source of life? There are really two sources of life, which are really the same. First of all, the way a neshama is created is through the love of his parents. The source of life is love. And similarly, the source of this world, we've mentioned many times, the Ramchal and Datvu note, as why did Hashem create the world? Anything that you suggest can be disproven very easily because it infers that Hashem was lacking something. Hashem is perfect. He doesn't lack anything. So why did he create the world? Says the Ramchal, based on the Zohar, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. Altruism. Altruism is selfless giving, which by definition is that you give without getting anything in return. It's giving that does not infer that you were lacking something. It's just an ideal to give. So that's why Hashem, even though he's perfect, he wants to give. And that's why he created the world. Now, continues the Ramchal very quickly. Okay, Hashem wants to give. What is he going to give? He's going to give the perfect gift. Right? When Elon Musk goes to a wedding, he gives a great gift. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give anything. So if he wants to give, he's going to give the perfect gift. What is the perfect gift? Himself. The only thing which is perfect is God himself. Now, how does Hashem give himself to us? He thought of an ingenious idea called the neshama. Chilek Elokam mima'al, each of us have a spark of God in us, which is also called the Tzelem Elokim. And as we learned in the past, Tzelem Elokim is translated correctly, the image of God. It's from the word litzalem. Litzalem is to copy. That man is supposed to copy God. And this is the concept in Latin, in philosophy, called imitatio Dei, to imitate God. Okay? So, why was the world created? Hashem wants to give. What does he give? The perfect gift. What is the perfect gift? Himself. How does he give himself to us? He gives each of us the capability of copying him. Final question. How do we copy God? What does he do all day? The answer is, complete the cycle. By being altruistic. When man, instead of being selfish and self-centered, is altruistic, he is emulating God. And that is what happens during war. Let's go down to source number 6. Rav Kook writes in some very interesting letters during World War I. This is Negroto Re'ia, Siman Tavshin Lamed Hei. Ve'im ki me'urpalot heina machshavot be'ita mevucha hazot. He says that at this time of war, it's a time of confusion. It's hard to think straight during war. Va'pratiyut hi nivla'at kol kach bimhumat haklal. A person's individuality is swallowed up in the national, in the international. Because on the battlefield, you don't think of yourself. If I'm thinking of myself, I won't be on the battlefield. The whole idea of war, again, not only on the battlefield, but also look at what's been going on in Israel over the last month. We see everyone's volunteering, and this cousin is volunteering picking grapefruits. And my brother went volunteering on Yom Shishi to pick tapuzim, oranges. And I helped my son pick olives. And there are people coming, volunteers from America, coming to help out the farmers and to help out and volunteer and play music and talk and visit the sick. Everyone helps each other out during war. And it brings out the altruism of a person. Let's look in source 7. A similar igeret, also written by Rav Kook during war, during World War I. This is igeret Tavshin Nun Gimel. Both of these were written in 1915. Tafresh Ayin Hei, Tafresh Ayin Vav. Ve'achshav machshava haklalit. The idea of klaliut is the opposite of pratiut. It's the opposite of being self-centered. It's being altruistic. Being considerate, being giving. Hamachshava haklalit haholechet uporachat benishmat hachushvim hamavlitim kvar et otiyoteha bimlo'o. The nationalistic and the idealists, he's probably referring here also to the socialism, which was part of the revolution of World War I, the idea of giving of yourself and working, not to put money in your pocket, but for the klal. In another place, and maybe I should have brought the source, in Zichrono Re'ia, Rav Kook writes about, even in World War I, where the good guys and the bad guys, it wasn't so clear, but the fact that they're not even fighting as nations. The individual becomes part of the nation. Nations join either the Allies or the Axis, and they join blocks against each other. In other words, the whole idea of the world is functioning through rising to a higher level, rising out of our self-centeredness. This idea of rising above my self-centeredness is the key to understanding love. Love of fellow man, love of God, rising above myself. Yirah, awe, realizing that there are some things more important than I am. Shel HaTorah VeHaMitzvah, the idealism, right? What do you think about during war? Unfortunately, like we've all felt, you go to funerals, you go to Shiva. When you see an 18-year-old body being lowered into the ground, you think existential questions, right? What is life? And am I utilizing my life? And what are priorities in life? And what is less important in life, right? War gets us, and that's how Rav Kook is explaining the idea of mitat tzadikim mechaperet, that when the tzadikim, these altruistic people who lead the charge, we could have and should have noticed them when they were madrichim in the youth movement, or when they were volunteering in Magen David Adom, or when we have great people among us, but we don't stop and notice them until we have to eulogize them. And that is chaval. War brings us to a higher level of appreciating altruistic people, helping other people. Hihi hamachshira ta geula. This is what the geula is about, says Rav Kook. Hihi hameviya et rucha de malka meshicha. What is the spirit of Mashiach? The Kutzker Rebbe said it so beautifully. Focus well. The Kutzker Rebbe says that if each of us would treat our neighbor as if he were the Mashiach, it wouldn't make a difference even if he wasn't. Right? Catch that? If each of us would, if we would all treat each other as if me, were, as if the other guy is the Mashiach, we would be at the Ge'ula. The main point of Ge'ula is not Mr. Mashiach. The main point of Ge'ula is that we are godly, that we are altruistic, that we are giving, that we rise above our self-centeredness. Because that's what Ge'ula is about. And even if Mr. Mashiach doesn't come, we're there. What Rav Kook basically is saying is that, you know what, let's see another point where Rav Kook says it even more clear. Source 12. Running out of time, so we're going to hope I can get into this quickly. Yeah, here we go. Orot HaKodesh, Musar HaKodesh, Amud Kuf Mem Zayin. Rav Kook writes as follows. This is something I hope it sounds familiar for those who are learning with us. Ha'adam tzarich lechalitz tamid mimizgurotav hapratiot. A person has to constantly struggle to rise above his self-centered framework. People have this tendency to be very self-centered, ad shekol rayonotav sovevim tamid rak al dvar goralo aprati. What preoccupies most people is what am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? What am I going to do? Where am I going to be for Shabbat? Right? Now, if we're honest with ourselves, Rav Kook continues, Shizel moridet ha'adam lo'omek ha'katnut. This is a life of smallness. Right? Does anybody care what I wear? Does anybody care what I eat? These are totally insignificant issues. Ve'en ketz liyisurim gashmiim v'ruchaniyim ha'masuvavim mizeh. If a person is living a life of smallness, of self-centeredness, nebuch, he's going to be suffering. Because you know what? You're never going to have it all. And if all you care about is yourself, you're going to be suffering spiritually also. Because you're not rising to become part of something bigger. Now, Rav Kook, notice when he talks about that this person, Nebuch, is living a life of smallness, it's not just that he could be part of something big. He could be part of something eternal. Be part of Am Yisrael. Be part of Eretz Yisrael. You know, so, but it's also katnut, also is in terms of immaturity. And part of that arrow that we always see in Rav Kook, that life is about maturing. What does it mean maturing? To become more and more godly. right? The arrow is open at the top. Now, what does it mean? When we are young, all a little child thinks about is himself, right? I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm tired. When he gets a little older, he discovers his siblings, and it's more fun to play with a balloon. I pass it to you, you pass it to me. Then he goes to gun, and he discovers his friends. Then he's a teenager, and he discovers his peers. For teenagers, that's even more important already than his family. Then he gets a little older. He's ready to start going out and get married, which is 50-50, right? You buy her flowers or chocolate or whatever she wants, and she will crochet you a kippah, right? 50-50. And then you're ready to have children, which is 100% giving. And in other words, the climb of life is to become more and more giving, more and more altruistic, more and more godly. Now, to get to that point, there are two ways. There is the easy way. It's an ideal to be idealistic. It's an ideal to be giving. It's an ideal to be considerate. It's an idea, right? But if we don't get there the easy way because it's an ideal, does that mean there's never going to be a geula? Right, there has to be. It's one of the 13 principles of belief. Ani ma'amin be'emunah, that there's going to be a geula. So the only other way that we can get to that point of altruism, of godliness, is the rough way, through milchamot. Because milchamot turns a person into an altruistic person. Again, on the battlefield, what's that?
And people who are not really, it turns them inside out. It turns them inside out if the whole being is about themselves. And
yeah. Right? Yeah. We evaluate, we have no choice but to evaluate what life is about. And we have to volunteer more. Right? If these guys are giving their lives, what? Many, at least that I can do is do some more shmirot, right? Do some volunteer, write some more articles, you know, go out to the hotels and we're going Bezrat Hashem to a hotel to give some divrei chizuk, to sing a little, to give shiurim, or whatever you can do. Everyone gives what they can. That is what war is about. So if we don't get there to that point of altruism and godliness and ge'ula, and shalom. By the way, this is what shalom is about. Shalom is about shlemut, that we all treat each other as if we're the other guy is the Mashiach. This is also what Rav Kook writes in Source 13, in Orot Amud Kuf Samechvav. Haneshama haklalit shel Knesset Yisrael. Every Jew has an individual spark of God, but we also have a spark of the national soul of Knesset Yisrael. The Kabbalistic term Knesset Yisrael is exactly that. It's from the word lekanes. It's a kinus of all the millions, 600,000 of sparks of God. Eina shora b'ish haprati ki im be'eretz Yisrael. When does a person get that neshama, that nationalistic, unselfish neshama? When he comes to Eretz Yisrael. Right? Why does a person make aliyah? In terms of his own bank account, he'd better off staying in America. Right? In terms of his own career, he knows the language, he knows the mentality, that's where his family is. Right? In terms of me, there are a million and one reasons to stay in America, not to make aliyah. So what does aliyah have going for it? You're part of something big. You're part of the eternal nation. You're not living a life of smallness. You're part of Am Yisrael. I always tell my students that if 18-year-old Israelis are willing to give their lives for Eretz Yisrael, the least they can do is to live in Eretz Yisrael. You know, if something is worth dying for, it's also worth living for. And these help us sharpen our priorities. And that is why Rav Harlap in Source 14, let's finish up Source 13, Jump to the end. Shekol sheyeretzono yoter chazak li kalil b'nishama klalit ko to'ir bo be'or kedusha. The more a person is altruistic through Zionism, through being part of the state of Israel, so the more godly he is, the more it shines. Rav Chalap, in Source 14, Rav Kook's Talmid Muvhak, he writes on Mimayna Yeshua, page Yud Bet, Keshemagia tor hitgalut sa'adeya ge'ula, when the beginning of the footsteps of redemption begin. Reshita tshuvahi, the beginning of tshuva, is not to Shabbat. It's not that all of Israel is going to observe two Shabbatot. That's one possibility. But we see that we're very far away from that possibility. So how is the Geula going to come? Lashuv ulakitz michadash et musagei haklal hane'elam shel Yisrael. We have to revive the concept of nationalism, to rise above our self-centeredness, litna'er la'at la'at me'apratiyut, to shake off our self-centeredness little by little, shemitov ze yachtelu kalil kol ha'chataim va'ivutim. All of the crookedness that we have in life stems from overestimating ourselves, from arrogance, from putting ourselves in the middle, from people who, again, never matured. You know, Mela, a three-year-old, all he cares about is himself. That's Hashem gave him the survival instinct, right? It has to be that way. But if somebody at the age of 30 is still acting like a three-year-old and is still living for just for himself, and that's what the me generation has a problem with, he needs to be shaken up.
What about nationalism historically? This sounds like the opposite, but in every country, when we're stirring up the people, nationalism is really help us make your life better. This is a ruchnis to make your life better, but not, right? It's not the same thing as nationalism.
Okay, so Rav Kook writes about that in Orot, where we don't have time to get into the Pisgah. It is directly connected. But in a nutshell, Rav Kook writes that the chidush of Jewish nationalism, what we call over the last 100 years Zionism, is that it's not to put down the other nations. Whereas a French patriot hates the English, and vice versa. And we know that the American Nationalist Party, they don't like the blacks, and they don't like the Jews, and they don't like anyone who's not one of them. That's the negative nationalism, because it's me and my family and my clan above everyone else. That's German nationalism. Jewish nationalism is the exact opposite. It's v'nivrchu v'cha kol mishpechot ha'adama. It's to bring monotheism to the world, morality, to bring the Ten Commandments, to bring goodness, to bring altruism, right? Who brought the Ten Commandments and monotheism to the world and morality? Read Amnon Shapira's book, The 80 Revolutions of the Tanakh. The world was a terrible place before the Tanakh. People were eating each other. Everyone was exploiting everyone. And the slaves, the world was not a happy, people were not happy campers. Comes on Israel and starts talking about altruism, about tzedek u'mishpat. That's what Hashem tells Avraham. V'nivrchu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adama. Through you, I'm going to bring bracha to all of the nations of the world. We're a nation who wants to bring universal goodness. Because as soon as you start bringing altruism on the agenda and morality on the agenda, everyone's going to gain from it. And that's, again, what the Gula is about. The Gula is not just for Am Yisrael, it's for the entire world. What about this? One corner that we have to finish, and this is, I don't know if Nomi's here, but she asked, what about the innocent people? All those people at the music festival, whatever it was called, down in Reim, right? There were 250 people there who were killed, who were not soldiers. Mela soldier who was killed, or all those heroes of Kibbutz Be'eri and Kibbutz Sa'ad who gave their lives to save other people. So that's what we're talking about until now. What about people who stopped? They went to have a festival and have a good time, but they were killed. That's also called Kiddush Hashem. It's not on the same level of somebody who's altruistic, but let's look quickly in Source 15. The Shach in on Yoredea Shin Mem, Sifkat and Tet, I Efshar Lachlok Alze, Hamumar Sheneherag Bidei Akum. even if a person is a, even more than apikoros, he converted to Christianity. You can't get worse than that, right? Even if somebody converted to Christianity, if he is killed by goyim, havile mitato kapara, his death atones, and he is called a kodesh. He's called holy. All those people who were killed in the Holocaust, many of them tried to hide their Judaism. They did not want to be Jewish. And nevertheless, Hitler gathered them all together. As Rabbi Yitz Greenberg says, he didn't check anybody's tzitzis when he pushed them into the gas chamber. What about them? The Chatam Sofer in Chelek Bet in Yoradea, Siman Shin Lamed Gimel, third line of Sur 16. Afilu meit mitoch risho, kidichtiv natnu et nevelat avadecha ma'achal le'of. Af al gav dehayu rishaim, umeitu mitoch risham, karu lehu avadecha. They are called servants of God. Where does the Chatam Sofer get this from? He's quoting Sur 17, Tilim Ayin Tet. Mizmor le'asaf. Elohim ba'u goyim benachalatecha. Exactly the Hamas. The goyim came and they try and take away the land of Israel. Timu etechal kodshecha. They defiled the holy. Samot Yerushalayim le'iyim. They destroyed Yerushalayim. Natnu et nivelat avadecha ma'achal le'of ha'shamayim. Basar chasidecha le'chayto ares. This is the pasuk that the Chatam Sofer is quoting. All right, if a person was killed in the times of the Tanakh, that means that he was sinned, that he was a sinner, right? In those days, the Tanakh works on the basis that if you're righteous, you win the wars, and if you're not righteous, you lose the wars. So we're talking about people who lost the war, they're not righteous. Nevertheless, the birds are eating the carrion of your servants. They're called servants, and your chasidim. Shafchu damam kamayim sivod Yerushalayim ve'in kover. There's no one to bury them. Hayinu cherpa lishcheinenu. We, this is mamash, what happened on Simchat Torah. You know, it's unbelievable. When you see what the rabbis in Chutz La'aretz write, you know, one writes that, you know, we have to start being more careful not to bring our cell phones into shul. And, you know, we should check the kashrus better. And that's his idea of tshuva. That is true. But Simchat Torah was the biggest chilul Hashem in our lifetimes. Maybe people were around during the Holocaust, it was similar. But in our lifetimes, there never was. 1,500 Jews killed in one day. They just came into the land of Israel. Where's God? And that's what they say. Lag vakelis lesvivotenu. They laugh at us. What is Allahu Akbar? Our God is greater than your God. Ad ma Hashem tenaf lenetzach. Tivar kmo esh kinatecha. God, when are you going to remain silent? Your temper should be burning, should appear towards the goyim. Sorry, I didn't forget to put the source down. We're in the middle of Source 17. Shfoch hamatcha el goyim asher lo yedaucha. Sound familiar? Right? This is what we say when we open the door at Leil HaSeder. Hashem, pour your anger on those goyim who don't know you. V'mamlachot asher b'shimcha lo karau. Even if they might be monotheistic, if they're doing this in the name of Islam, they are doing a chilul Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Ki achal et Yaakov et navei weishamu. Al tizkor lanu avonot rishonim. Yes, Hashem, yes, we have sins. Yes, we make mistakes. But Hashem, this is not a time to remember them. Ozreinu elu heyishenu al devar kvod shemecha. Hashem, you have to help us, not for our sake, but for your sake. Because when the goyim are laughing at Am Yisrael, and at Medinat Yisrael, and at Tzva Haganah Yisrael, that is a bad reflection on Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Vatzilenu v'chaper chatotenu. Why? Lima'an shemecha. Lama yomru agoyim. Why should the goyim say, here's the punchline, Ayei Elokeichem. Jew, where's your God? This is the Chilul Hashem. Asher cherfucha Hashem, that the goyim cut you down. V'anachnu amcha v'tzon maritecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are your people, we're your representatives in this world. In short, when a Jew is killed just because he's Jewish, he's not judged by what he did. He is judged by what he is. And that's why he goes straight to Olam Haba. Because he's Jewish. And even though somebody could say, well, it's not fair, you know what? They were doing wrong things, you know, at this festival, and they're not religious. And when a person is killed just because he's Jewish, it has nothing to do with reward and punishment. He lost everything that he has, his family, his career, his house. He lost everything just because he was Jewish. So it's only fair that he should gain a large share in the world to come just because he's Jewish. Again, like a little child who's killed in the Holocaust or in a terrorist attack. Hashem doesn't judge him at all by what he did or what he didn't do. But he is like a korban, a national sacrifice. He's I always remember, just to finish off on maybe a little lighter note, the famous joke about Goldstein. Goldman, whatever you want to call him. Cohen gets up to heaven, and Hashem gives him the entrance exam. And at the end, God says to him, you can enter heaven. So Cohen says to God, God, you asked me a lot of questions. Can I ask you one question? He says, sure. Cohen says, God, is it true that we are the chosen people? God answers, yes, it is true, you are the chosen people. To which Cohen answers, well, would you mind choosing somebody else for a change? We have lost more than we have gained over history by being Jews, by being God's representatives into the world, by being the conscience of mankind. And that is why, and the Chochmat Adam in Source 18 brings down Lahalacha, V'nerag al yedei nochri, when somebody is killed by the goyim, afilu lo yatsa mimenu dam, klal, kegon, shenechnak. Usually, we, in Chutz La'aretz, you bury a person in a coffin, but you take off his clothing, and you do the tahara, you purify him. But if a person is killed by the goyim, he's buried in his clothes. Why? In order to rile up the Jewish people, to call for vengeance, to call Hashem for vengeance, because this person was killed just because of his Judaism. To summarize, Rav Kook is directly connecting war with altruism and with giving and with being godly. And that is the higher level of what comes out of war. And that is how Rav Kook explains mitat tzadikim mechaperet, that not just innocent people, but davka the righteous help us analyze and learn from them and from by eulogizing them. And bichlal, during war, everyone has to be that much more altruistic. But even those who are just innocent and they're just victims of terror, they also, as we saw, are called Kodesh. They are called the holy people, even if they were not so religious, because they were just killed because they were members of Am Yisrael. And so we look up to them as we, just like Hashem, doesn't look at them, what did they do or what they didn't do, but we look at them for what they are. They have a Jewish neshama. They're part of this role of being part of the chosen people. And there's a lot of food for thought here. But just to the main point here, Rav Kook is explaining why wars are part of the Gula process. Do they have to be? No. If we would be altruistic and giving out of the ideal, we would not need the bumpy road of wars. Adkan.